Hello there, and welcome to the NFL Roadshow, Wednesday of week 11, and I am really excited about my guest, JT O'Sullivan, who provides wonderfully measured and thoughtful and non-hot takey analysis of quarterback play on his YouTube channel, The QB School. And I've been dying to have him back on. He's been on the show before to get his thoughts on some of the quarterback storylines that have kind of taken over this season. And I've got a long list of quarterbacks that I want to ask him about specifically, more than I'm sure we'll have time to get to. But I think that you will enjoy his analysis and we'll all walk away with a better idea of what we're actually seeing on Sundays. First, though, a couple of news items. My guest from Monday's show, let's start there, is in the news because he made the list of Hall of Fame semifinalists again. So congratulations to the one and only Torrey Holt. Also notable in the list of names that came out Tuesday, the five first-year eligible players, James Harrison, Dwight Freeney, Jari Evans, Darrell Revis, who I think is a first ballot guy, and Joe Thomas, who in my opinion is definitely a first ballot guy. But we'll see what the voters think in February when the 2023 class is officially announced at NFL Honors. And I just want to say this, and I wonder if anyone's with me here. I have now reached the point where the Hall of Fame music inspires like a Pavlovian response for me. Like I heard it in a clip today about the announcement, and I was like, am I going to cry? Where did that come from? And it's the music tied to all of the other moments when I have cried. Because that's what a normal person does with Hall of Fame stuff when it's announced. Anyway, I had a different reaction to the news about Darrell Henderson, who was waived by the Rams on Tuesday for some reason, despite being their leading rusher on the year. Granted, with only 283 yards. Rams did that a day after the Broncos waived their leading rusher, Melvin Gordon, following his fifth fumble of the year. So we'll see where both of those veteran, do they count as veterans? I guess in the case of Darrell Henderson, definitely, and Melvin Gordon. Anyway, we'll see where those two guys end up. And we'll see how Sunday's full circle moment goes for the Panthers. They announced on Tuesday that they are going back to Sam Darnold against the Broncos. One of eight games in the early window of week 12. We've got four in the afternoon. Not a single bye this week, you guys, with, of course, six teams playing on Thursday. And I'll have more on all of those games from a fantasy standpoint coming up later tonight. We're dropping two pods today to get you set for all of the early lineup moves that need to be made in fantasy before the Thanksgiving games. First, though, as advertised, the incredibly smart longtime quarterback and current quarterback analyst from the QB School, which you should all subscribe to on YouTube, JT O'Sullivan. Let's break the huddle.
Hurry up, let's go!
Two on two. Ready? Three.
JT, I have been looking forward to talking to you. And I know we talked pretty recently, but I feel like there have been people seem very divided about quarterback play this year, maybe more than I can recall. Like the Tua conversation is very extreme these days, and I can't wait to talk to you about that. But this week, you did a full breakdown of Patrick Mahomes and said that he is running away with the MVP race. I think it's hard probably to argue against that at this moment, though I'm certain that some people will try to do that. Why, in your opinion, is that race not close?
Well, I think there's two points. One, and probably the most important, is how Patrick Mahomes has been playing. You know, I think he's separated himself most recently, and we all have recency bias covering the league or any sort of sports, it feels like. But what he's been able to do and do consistently with what probably most people would think is not the same level of kind of perimeter weapons that they've had in the past, I think makes it probably more impressive to most, myself included. And just the high level of consistency. And he's just been able to keep doing what he's doing, really. And he makes it look shockingly easy. And really at the biggest moments, I think, too, he's got a knack for kind of coming to the big stage and showing why people have such a high regard for him. That and the fact that some other guys who maybe were in that race or pushing him the last few weeks or month have kind of fallen off for a number of different reasons and probably created that separation that maybe wasn't there a month ago.
Well, I want to get your thoughts about Josh, but first with Patrick, when you watch his tape, is there anything that you see this year that you feel like feels new to his game, or just more of the same and consistently better, consistency being the thing that you pointed out?
I mean, I think the thing that probably jumps off the film, and I don't know if it's necessarily this year, but it feels like I don't want to know if I want to frame it as patience or maturity, but the feeling like he's not forcing things down the field. So there's certainly times when he still does his thing, right? And creates and makes these magical throws and arm angles and all those types of things, but it doesn't feel like there are any forced throws. So the game's almost cleaner or easier and slowed down a little bit for him. And it helps when you've got a Hall of Fame tight end and a guy who's really kind of coming into his own as a whole different discussion, but that with coupled with the creativity and the maturity or the kind of the ability that he's able to make it seem so easy, clean and smooth, yeah, all coupled together is kind of what does it for me with him.
You mentioned the Hall of Fame tight end, and certainly that helps that, you know, you can always go to him and he can make a play. But the point that you made earlier is, for me, the thing that puts him over the top and makes this conversation such a simple one at this point, because Josh is the other guy that I think is in this conversation. But when people want to make it like a Tua conversation versus Patrick Mahomes, I think it's easy to tip the scale in Patrick Mahomes's department when you look at the guys that he's throwing to. Like, and it's not even just the guys that he started with at the beginning of the year. This game against the Chargers this past week, his receivers, looking at the box score, you're looking at like Justin Watson and Sky Moore, who we were like, where's Sky Moore? And now, out of nowhere comes Sky Moore to contribute 5 catches and 63 yards. You've got a bunch of tight ends in the mix, and Jody Fortson and Gray, and but Valdez-Scantling, it's like he elevates the players around him. And I think it's hard to make that argument for some other people. And I'm not saying that Tua is not the quarterback who can't do that. That's not at all the conversations, but like, we are certainly not seeing him do that in Miami. He's got so many weapons around him. How do you evaluate Tua's play in that circumstance?
Well, I'm always going to kind of default back to not necessarily going with, hey, this is what it's looked like most recently. I think Tua has always been this player. Okay, so I think it goes all the way back to college. I think from there, people have you've either felt like you've had to make this choice, this dichotomy. What are you, Tua on or not? Or and the reality is, he was really good in college. When he's healthy, he's got this unique capacity to get the ball out with great anticipation and great accuracy. Now, when he's not healthy and he's not throwing to quote unquote, elite guys, it hasn't been as obvious to everyone else. But when you turn on the film, he's been that quarterback for as long as he's been in the national eye. He really has. And so I think now we're just able to see it consistently because he's got dudes on the perimeter and he's in a really cool, fun scheme and they're winning. And so it feels like this is like, oh, what's going on? Well, he's healthy and he's playing like himself. Now, that being said, he still, goes out there and has some throws where you're like, damn, bro, like, can we get that deep throw down the field? Just that little bit of consistency that I think would kind of elevate him in the conversation across the league. But I think he's just proven that this is who he is and who he has been. And now he's healthy in a good situation. And, he's really good.
Is that the biggest knock against him in his play, the ability to get the ball down the field consistently?
I mean, probably not. I would probably say just his ability to be on the field healthy, and that some of that's not your fault as a quarterback, but yeah, the ability to, you have to be, I always think of it as your best ability is your availability. And that's, it hurts sometimes, and sometimes it's not your fault, but you got to be out there and you got to be able to do it consistently. And we just haven't seen it up till this point. So I think that and kind of just the ability to drive the ball down the field, but he's not the only guy, who doesn't have the ability to make Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes throws. There's only a few guys that do that, and that's why they're so damn special.
Okay, so what is it that, just because, so the Tua thing has been so divisive, what is your take on that? Like, why that's been the case? Why people are so wildly split on him?
I honestly don't know, and I don't really kind of care. Roll in that world, if that yeah, makes sense. Like, I mean, uh-huh, that's the beautiful thing about my little sphere. Like, I really just try to like look at the film, and my opinion is of the film. I don't know Tua personally. I don't know any of those dudes personally, but I can tell you that the film has said for a long time that this is who he is. And so you know, if you don't want to watch the film, then you're able to kind of get captured by these, you know, bizarro narratives, and they can take over, especially when someone's not healthy. I think that's the thing that, you know, for me comes back to it is when guys are healthy, and granted, nobody's healthy this time of year. You see it, you're seeing it across the league.
But there are levels.
Yeah, you have to be able to play, you know, that part of the health element of it, and play at a high level. And I think he's proving that when he does, he's as accurate as anyone. He throws with significant anticipation that can kind of cover some maybe gaps in his ability to rip it like some other guys can rip it. And so those things coupled together with those perimeter weapons, with a scheme that, like, oh my gosh, they're playing to his strengths. You know, what an idea to play to your quarterback's strengths consistently. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, all those things, it looks like it's really cool and fun, and they've got it going.
How much, and I know that, but I just want to be clear. I feel like I want to walk away from this conversation with more clarity on Tua. How much do you think he gets credit for the success that they're having in Miami? And I know what you're saying about, like, he has good pieces around him. He, you know, they're calling good plays, like, but we can't hold that against him necessarily. But in terms of evaluating for people who want to figure out where he kind of ranks in the scheme of quarterbacks that are out there, like if he's on, you know, Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes' level yet, or whether or not he's like next tier or even the tier after that, if he's somebody that you kind of need to have things be perfect around him, where do you kind of put him in that type of a ranking system? I'm not asking you to rank him, but like just,
yeah, I mean, I guess I would push back a little bit. I would say, hey, you got to just take a deep breath with the rankings and the tiers. I know people love that shit, and it just makes life really easy, and life isn't very easy. And playing quarterback is tough, messy, and muddy. I would say, for me, I'm hitting pause a little bit on where that he's going to come out of that, because I want to see him do it over the course of a season, over the course of multiple seasons, when it's in really crucial games. You know, to me, we haven't seen Miami play any meaningful games up until this point. No offense to Miami, and every game's important, whatever. But we'll see where he comes out in those championship moments. In those moments, can he elevate when he's in the national spotlight? Those types of things that I think we saw a little bit in college, but it's been a half a decade. You know, I want to see it in the league. I want to see a consistency to it. I want to see him do it in the playoffs. I want to see him do it maybe in some non-Miami weather. All those types of things that I think if he proves he can, he's got the opportunity to be right up there with a lot of those guys. Now, he's never going to have the exact same kind of approach to the game as far as the playmaking ability, the splash athleticism. But you look across kind of the history of the league, and there's been a lot of guys who have played quarterback at a really high level that don't have all those crazy characteristics that are still really good quarterbacks that can elevate their team and take advantage of their great situation, coaching, perimeter play, all those things, and play at a really high level for a really long time. And so sometimes you just have to say, oh my God, I take a deep breath. It's November, it's week, whatever, 11, 12. We got a long way to go. And he's put himself in a great situation. They put themselves in a great situation to play meaningful games down the stretch. What they do at those will be kind of how we really remember this season for Tua.
When you watch the tape, what have you seen that you can specifically point to, like, this is on him, this is what he is bringing to the offense that is most impressive to you?
I think it's a number of things that a lot of people talk about: the accuracy, the anticipation, his ability. I think the growth we've seen in the film has been his ability to manipulate defenders with his eyes, with his shoulders, to be able to throw people open, throw into space. He's not the only guy in the league that does that, okay? I know people freak out. Like, he's not the only cat that can do that. But he's doing it at an extremely consistent level. And I think that's the part that is kind of separating him when it comes to, you know, if you loved rankings and wanted to rank the most accurate or the most, you know, the cat who has the best anticipation consistently, a lot of NFL quarterbacks can throw with anticipation, you know, routes on air, in the summer, in the spring. Can you do it consistently on Sunday, you know, between the numbers, between the hashes? Those are the types of things that when you turn on the Tua film, he's doing it every quarter, every series. And that to me is the separator for what he's doing right now.
You mentioned anticipation a number of times. And when I was going through some of the film that you've tweeted recently, you mentioned that a lot when talking about Josh Allen's play. And I wondered, anticipation in terms of developing that, is that something that you think you see that develops over time, that comes with experience, or is it like an innate thing? I assume it's some, to some degree, it's a blend of the two, but is that something that you can teach somebody who doesn't appear to have it, you know, when they initially enter the league?
For sure. And I mean, I personally, anecdotally, have coached high school football, and we can teach it at the high school level. You can certainly teach it at the league level. I think it can also comes from a number of different factors. It's not just the quarterback saying, hey, okay, I'm going to throw this ball early. It's the level of detail in the preparation from the eligible, the wide receiver, the tight end, the running back, to be at the correct depth at the correct time when they're supposed to be there, and the trust that goes into saying, hey, I'm going to let this thing go early. You need to be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there and not jack the quarterback, and to be able to do it consistently. And the other thing I think about it is, a lot of guys, it's easier to do it outside the numbers, in my opinion. Like, people love to smash Zach Wilson right now for a whole different probably discussion. But you turn on that film, it's a disaster, but he's still throwing sometimes with anticipation outside the numbers down the field, big time throws. So you can, you know, you can be struggling, but you can still have flashes of it. And a lot of guys can do it. I think the thing that separates it from a lot of those guys is the level of consistency that you're able to do it, and the accuracy. You can't have guys diving and making, you know, circus catches on the sidelines or falling to the ground. It's, are you hitting them in stride? Are you putting it easy for them to catch, letting them run after the catch with anticipation? Well, then you're really rolling.
With regard to Zach Wilson, do you see enough salvageable traits there that you think that they should continue to play him this season? Or is there, I mean, the defense is so good that I get the argument for turning to a Joe Flacco and somebody who's been a professional quarterback for a long time. The argument can be made that you don't develop, you don't get better as a quarterback if you're standing on the sideline. So that might be a tough decision for that franchise to make, since they have a lot invested in Zach Wilson. But what have you seen there that kind of pushes you in one direction or another with this tough decision that I think Robert Saleh has?
Yeah, it is tough. I don't envy those cats at all. I probably, unless, you know, we're not in the building, so we really don't know the vibe of the locker room, but unless he's really, really lost it, I'm probably sticking with Zach Wilson. And for a number of different reasons that
unless
you talked about.
Lost the locker room, you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Got like it. If his team, if you can tell that when he walks into the huddle, they're like, damn, like for real, you know, that kind of deflating vibe, because I still think he's got some unique kind of high level characteristics that, you know, potentially could develop and make him a truer asset at the quarterback position. Now, has it been there recently? Hell no. You know, obviously. But still, when you turn on the film, not every quarterback in the league has the capacity, has the plays that Zach Wilson has flash. Now there's some significant development that has to go into making him a better player. And you can dive into whatever those details mean as far as his retreating, bailing out of the pocket. He's certainly skipping over people in reads as well. You know, that last game, it's hard for me to kind of give a true evaluation because it looked like it was nasty out there. I've certainly played quarterback before in situations where it really felt like my right hand was like a, you know, a frozen wooden spoon, and you just can't throw the ball where you want to throw it. Now, you watch Mac Jones, and he kind of was doing okay. It felt like, as far as his ball placement, and sometimes Zach Wilson did all right, but other times you're like, you know, you're really, really hurting the team. And that part of it, I think, is the biggest thing. Like, if when he goes out there, does everyone feel like we got no chance? Well, then you got to make a change. And this doesn't have to be a change forever. That's the other thing. It can be, hey, you know, we're going to sit you for a couple of weeks, let you watch it from the sidelines. It can be a real tough lesson. I'm not sure it's ever good for you, but, you know, sometimes those are those tough decisions. That's why those guys get paid the big bucks.
Another young quarterback in very different ways that faced a lot of criticism his first year and a half, I would say, but has recently just skyrocketed in like opinion polls, is Justin Fields. Love the fact that they unlocked what he's able to do on the ground, and in my opinion was like the way that they should have used him out of the gate. What do you see in his play that you have found impressive this season?
Well, I mean,
you say that they've already won. I've heard you say that like they have their answer.
Yeah, you're putting it on a tee for me with my guys Tua and Justin. Yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of what you've said as far as unlocking what they're doing, I think the other thing that makes him what he's done the last month or so so impressive is the same thing that everyone was kind of, you know, trashing on the Bears for earlier in the year, as far as, you know, give him some sort of help, like give him some sort of help on the perimeter, anything. And they just haven't. And I don't care if some of those guys have played okay this year. None of them, in my opinion, are true ones anywhere. And so to do it like that, I think makes it more impressive. Now, I will say, I love to run the quarterback as much as anyone, probably at any level of football. I think it just adds significant advantage numbers-wise everywhere in the run game. In my opinion, they're borderline running him too much now. And so you got to find that fine line. And I know it's easy when he gets hurt to say that type of stuff, but even when you're watching it, it looked like, you know, we're putting too much on his shoulders, kind of like a little bit how I think Buffalo is dealing with Josh Allen, as far as just saying, hey, yeah, we know we have this. Yes, I've already said we're already winning. The Bears are not winning the Super Bowl this year. They're not. So that development of what that looks like moving forward, they've won at the quarterback position. Now we need that foundation to be as strong as possible. So the things that I want to see from Justin Fields that aren't on the film anywhere, okay, and this can be because of what they're asking him to do and because of his perimeter, he's never throwing with anticipation, ever, up until this point. I want to see one clip of capital A anticipation. I've never seen it. And so there are opportunities on the film for him to do it. Now, is he turning it down? Is he not being asked to do it? Does he not trust his pass protection, his perimeter? It could be probably all of those things. But next step development, what I'd love to see before the end of the year, those types of throws start to creep into the film.
They went out and got Chase Claypool. And I think some people were excited that, like, here is some help, right, in terms of receivers. And to your point, Chase Claypool's never been a one and was arguably the three, you know, at times in Pittsburgh. So but they're hardly using him. Is that Justin? Is that the offense?
It's all of the above. It's not Justin. I don't think it's Justin necessarily. I think it's probably the scheme. I think it's the player himself, either not adjusting or not learning it fast enough, or just not being good enough to crack the lineup. I mean, that's the other truth too. You know, that and the fact that, you know, I'd be a little pissed if I was a wide receiver that got traded for and they're running 13 personnel out there every other series. You know, that can be a different discussion. And I'm someone who loves wide edges and changing the flanks and calling plays and all those types of things. But, you know, let's save the 13 personnel, you know, for a sprinkle as opposed to every other series. If, you know, and the fact that you turn on the film, and no offense to Claypool, but he not winning. There's no consistent separation from what they're asking him to do. And so I can see why he wouldn't be out there.
So you're not a huge fan of the Browns offense with those 13 personnel comments?
I mean, the crazy thing about it is I love those types of heavy, big personnels, but I don't necessarily like to live in that world. I think it's great if, as a changeup, if the team's not prepared for 22 personnel or, you know, a sprinkle of wildcat or a sprinkle of 13 or crazy edges or quads, but to say, hey, we're going to roll out, you know, big, heavy 13 personnel and we want our quarterback to develop, you know, you're not going to do, like, those things aren't the same thing. You can't do it. And so it's frustrating from that standpoint. I don't necessarily care if the Bears win, but I want Justin Fields to get better and be healthy and see those types of things flourish for him.
You got a little fired up on Twitter when LeSean McCoy went on Fox and said that he wouldn't want to go to Chicago if he was a wide receiver because Justin Fields can't throw the ball. You're laughing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so fortunate in what I do and my little space that I don't have to have a hot take all the time. And I feel like sometimes some of these cats are kind of backed into a corner to have an opinion on something that they probably have never seen, let alone watched in significant depth or detail. And so, you know, to say that Justin Fields can't throw to me means you've never watched the film ever. Because even when, you know, he's hurt or, you know, they're not necessarily putting him in great situations to be a true kind of progression pocket passer, he's still ripping impressive throws down the field. So to say crazy shit like that to me is just, you know, hilarious. And I'm pretty good at muting.
Love the mute button. When going back to Cleveland for a second, do you think that they go away from
the way that they have played offense for the last couple of years once Deshaun Watson's on the field? Does that change things enough for them at the quarterback position where they move away from that?
You know, this is a weird, and I'm sure this was not your intent, and I probably haven't done the personal work to give you a good answer, but you'll probably be able to see the answer if you're a fan of the channel at all, because I don't know how I feel about the Cleveland quarterback situation here moving forward. Like, I really, like, that's just me being honest in real time. Like, I'm not sure I'm that interested in watching Deshaun Watson play football. Now, maybe that changes if they get really good and everybody wants to see him. But just personally, I don't care. Like, it's just not for me right now. And that's the reality of it. And, you know, we'll see how that shakes out. But right now, I don't have any kind of, and that, I don't know the dude personally. I'm just not interested in necessarily how he's going to play football or what that organization is going to be doing moving forward.
Well, I can't tell you personally how much I enjoyed that answer. So I'm happy to move along. Josh Allen, we talked a little bit about him and the fact that you highlighted his anticipation. You used a lot of phrases when you were breaking down his tape from, it was specifically the Minnesota game that I was watching. Like structure, well, specifically out of structure, on time. You highlighted a lot of third and longs. Is he being forced to or asked to create too much this season?
Yeah, that's probably a way to phrase it as far as being able to create. Like, when I think of create, I think of like there's nothing there and you got to just go get it yourself. And I think he really is kind of being asked to do too much. And I think it's not just that, though. It's the support of the running game. It's the support of, you know, a new offensive coordinator, that things look a little different than they did last year, as far as guys popping open and as far as the layering of the plan, as far as the play action and the crossers and just playing to his strengths. And it feels like Josh Allen feels like he's got to go out there and be the magician every single time and make a massive big play. And sometimes I just would like him to, or Ken Dorsey to say, hey, here's a couple easy completions. Or here's a couple, you know, we can get these plays going with a great series starting kind of series of plays and layer some game planning that you see from maybe some of the top tier play callers across the league, that it feels like right now that Buffalo just doesn't have that kind of rhythm to their plan and their play calling. And so I feel like he's like, oh, it's third and 15 again. I guess I'll just go, you know, Buffalo some fools and try to get a first down. Like, it's really hard to do that consistently. He can do it because he's a unicorn. But I think you've seen kind of the negative elements of that by him kind of falling into some turnovers that aren't him. And yeah, I think he's not quite as consistent with his ball control and his ball placement as he was at the end of last year when he was really kind of playing at an absurd elite level. And so we've got to make sense of wherever his normal level is with maybe a lot more help from a bunch of different variables.
Do you see anything on the tape that leads you to believe that his elbow is a factor?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not that kind of doctor. I'm sure it doesn't feel good right now. Like, I don't try.
Well, like, he's still out there launching it downfield. I mean, I would think
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's been any throw where you're like, oh man, that, you know, caught a huge gust and that doesn't look like Josh Allen at all, you know, but at the same time, and I mean, you know, no one feels good right now. I think that's the other thing that's really tough. It's easy to, you know, sit in front of the microphone and be like, I'm feeling great. You know, Thanksgiving, this is feeling good. Like, this is that time of year where, you know, no one feels good. Everyone's banged up. You know, that if you can, and again, so much of it is luck, and people hate talking about the variable of luck and what that plays in all these games and the health of a team moving forward and through the playoffs and in December, but it matters. And so hopefully them being healthy-ish and him being able to kind of salvage a little bit more of just like, hey, sometimes I feel like just play a little bit of point guard, just distribute it, let them go make a play for you. You don't always have to feel like you've got to make the big play all the time. And I think he just forces a few things that have led to turnovers that make people kind of think, you know, what the hell's going on with Josh Allen? You turn on the film and the vast majority of it is still great, really good. It's just those negative splash plays that are kind of making everybody kind of open their eyes and be like, well, so what's going on here? Regression to the mean here?
Do people, in your experience, do quarterbacks regress? Like, that's a phrase that we use a lot. I don't know that it makes a ton of sense to me. Like, we're hearing that with Carr this year. Like, we're seeing some regression in his play. I feel like it makes a lot more sense to look at circumstances kind of around a player that would lead to play regressing that doesn't suggest that the quarterback himself has somehow regressed.
Yeah, I mean, it would be really tough to measure that. I don't necessarily think you could make, you know, huge, significant, substantial regressions quickly at the quarterback position, especially nowadays. You see these guys playing for, you know, well into their 40s, those types of things that, you know, mid 30s feels like a little early for a regression with all the rules that benefit the quarterback nowadays. I think the harder part, to your point, is doing a little bit more of a nuanced analysis and say, you know, what the hell is really going on here? We're in a new system. You know, we've had some tough turnovers. We've lost some games we probably should have won, where I may be forcing it to my buddy on the perimeter, those types of things. Those are real life things. And so trying to make sense of what that looks like all in a new system where you're trying to learn and figure out, you know, build this relationship with a play caller, head coach, you know, new guys on the perimeter. And at the same time, at some point, and I don't know what it is, I'm sure guys a lot smarter than I am could figure it out, but at some point, you kind of know what a quarterback is, if that makes sense. Like, you, this is what they are, will most likely be moving forward. And you see people get better, all those types of things, for sure. But at some point, whether it's 3 seasons, 5 seasons, you know, this is Carr. And so they have to make the decision. Is this what they want moving forward? You know, I don't have to make that decision, but I can say that he certainly had his moments where you feel like, oh, you could definitely play for a long time on Sunday and play at a really high level. Now we just need to see it consistently, bro. And we need to have pieces around you, organizational structure, consistency, playmakers, a defense, all those types of things to allow you to flourish, hopefully.
Does Lamar need more around him in Baltimore?
Yeah. Hell yeah. But I mean, they've made, to me, that is a little bit more of an organizational choice where they're going to prioritize their money. And I feel like they're a little unique because of where they drafted Lamar, how they decided to build that offense, where they spend their money organizationally on, you know, different players, different positions. And if you're looking for traditional quarterback development up until this point, you're just not going to see it with those kind of choices. And it's hard for people on the outside to make sense of it, but it's, you know, it's certainly been successful in the regular season for them for a long time.
But does it put him in the best position to succeed? Like, he's one of those guys that always hovers on the fringe of the MVP chat. Like, we all know that he is this crazy talent, but I don't know that we've seen him come close to his ceiling. I mean, and that seems silly to say, like, he had that MVP year, but I don't know that they utilize him in all the ways that they possibly could to kind of like put him over the top in that conversation regularly.
I think that that's absolutely fair. The consistency element of it, but, and I think it's magnified when you see the flash of what he was that MVP year, because I think he did probably throw the ball a little bit more consistently well that year. Now, was that because of comfort level, other players around him, pieces around him? It just kind of, you know, sometimes you just catch a rhythm and can ride it out for a long time as well. But I think Lamar Jackson, you know, if you are Lamar Jackson trying to put yourself in his shoes as you negotiate this guaranteed money deal, you know, I think you have to want better pieces on the perimeter for you to have a, you know, for this thing to evolve and for you to elevate your game to the next level. And what that looks like, you know, I really don't know. And I think that's why it's so crazy complex for that relationship moving forward, especially when you're your own agent. I could only imagine. I really couldn't imagine.
I don't even want to imagine. I would very much like to pay somebody 10%, even though that seems egregious and gross, if I was in his position, to just go fight for me, like take that out of the mix. Yeah,
I think it's a lot less for the players.
Is it really?
I think it's 3%, or maybe I'm just dating
myself.
Holy
shit. Thank God for them.
I think I'm dating myself.
I don't know. I hope it's 3%. I just told you everything about my world here and
different industries, different sectors.
Anyway, not better. Was Marquise Brown not that guy on the perimeter?
I mean, what do you think? I mean, you think he's a true one? I mean, you know, I think, and then I just feel like the game has changed too. You know, that's the other part that's hard sometimes when you're like, you know, this is what it was a couple of years ago. Well, it's not a couple of years ago. Right now, the league is on fire with these unbelievable young perimeter players that can really make a massive difference immediately. And so I just couldn't imagine being a quarterback negotiating my deal or trying to be at the absolute pinnacle of the game and being like, I mean, I really like this tight end, I guess, you know, he's not necessarily. And then you look across the league and there are other tight ends that are significantly better, you know, not that Andrews isn't a great player, but like, he's not separating consistently. They're using him in great ways. And he's a very, very good player, but let's not get it twisted. He's not running routes like Kelce. I mean, there's nothing, you know, close as far as what that route tree looks like. And so it's got to be crazy frustrating. I honestly could not imagine having to be in that situation like that.
I keep waiting for Likely to be that guy. Who would agree? I mean, I know it's a tight end, but like, I feel like we've seen the flash of like, he has that wide receiver quality in his tight end arsenal.
Well, that, and I think that it's worth acknowledging that Kelce is certainly a very, very good player, but the creativity with how he's used in Kansas City is, in my opinion, not matched anywhere else in the league. They scheme for him to create separation. Like, there's times where he's not open, but Mahomes trusts him that he knows he's going to separate at the top, and he's got the wide receiver craft to be able to push off and separate, and the trust to be able to win on all these routes, whether it's across the middle, outside the numbers, creating space in the red zone. It's just, it's really unmatched. And of course, there's elements of recency bias, but I mean, it's hard to compare outliers like that to say, oh, we should get that guy on our team. Yeah, you definitely should. But even if you had him, I don't know if it would be the same, because the system and the way that they use him is not the same with how they use them, in my opinion, at the Baltimore World, where they do a good job. But I don't know if they have the same creativity kind of in their package, in their system on a week-to-week basis to be able to allow a cat like that to flourish.
I want to ask you about Justin Herbert, and I'm going to not say anything prior to it, because I don't want to lead the witness, and I'm completely open to anything that you have to say, even though everyone who's listening already knows that I have very strong feelings about this. But it's because it's not a bias, it is analysis. I'm open to being swayed in whatever direction you send me. What do you make of his play?
I mean, I don't know if I have a great way to kind of categorize the Herbert effect for me, but I'm
Herbert effect.
It's very, you know, he just, every week he makes throws where you're like, you should not be able to do that. You should not be able to do that. And it's all the time. And it makes me just kind of always go back to be like, well, what the hell did I miss, you know, with this not coming out? And what did everybody miss, really?
Everybody.
Mm-hmm. And even the Chargers, because he didn't play initially. But, okay. And I think it's worth acknowledging that's one thing. And then there are all these other variables too, as far as injuries over there, as far as, you know, what maybe they're asking him to do and how he maybe necessarily doesn't push it down the field, maybe as much as I would love to see in certain situations. And the fact that for whatever reason, it seems like some in moments where you want him to elevate and match some of these guys who a lot of people would like love to put in the top tier of quarterbacking, it for whatever reason doesn't happen. Now, that doesn't mean that it's never going to happen. That just means that right now in his career, that's where it is. And so I would be shocked if he doesn't continue to get better on the kind of trajectory that we've seen. But it doesn't mean playing quarterback in the league is easy. It really doesn't. And I think it's hard to one-off compare when you say, oh, you know, he's got to be like Mahomes, or he's got to be like Allen, or, you know, he's got to win some MVPs or things like that. I think all that stuff has the potential to come. But that organization, which is a whole different probably podcast, you know, has a tendency to feel like, you know, they're imploding from themselves. And there's a little bit of, whether they believe it in the building or whether they don't believe it, it feels like, you know, and I'm someone who's still in San Diego, so you know, you could talk about chargering as a verb. There's an element of that that I think for whatever reason kind of creeps into some of how they operate. And I think he can totally overcome stuff like that. I think he's got an unbelievable tool set. I think it's tough when you've got injuries, things aren't going the way that you want. You're probably not playing as an organization how you anticipated to be playing at this time of the year. But from a skill set, from Justin Herbert, you know, he's kind of feels a little bit to me the same way that I think of Fields, as far as they're not going to win the Super Bowl. I want him to develop. I want to see the consistency of improvement, be able to play there, because you see the flashes that you say, damn, if we ever put something really special around this, you got the opportunity to be a unicorn.
That's that. So in terms of the pieces around him, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, two guys that we think very highly of at the wide receiver position. Clearly injuries, as you've mentioned, have been a massive factor in what's happened with this offense this year. But are they the right pieces to highlight his skill set in the first place?
Well, I mean, I think those are nice pieces when they're available. I don't know if they're, when you look across the landscape of the league, as far as how it's evolved, as far as the speed, as far as the explosiveness, I'm not sure that those guys strike me, you know, as the same category as some of the other guys that maybe we're seeing at the absolute elite level. But that doesn't mean that they're not really good players and have been good players for a long time. But are they, you know, every time you put the ball in their hands, dynamic, take it to the house type cats? No, they're not. They're just not. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not good players and can be good players. But I think you could certainly argue that, you know, upgrading there would benefit Justin Herbert. But I think you could make that argument for, you know, 25 teams as well.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. The Herbert thing, because of what you said about the tools that do flash and the arm and the plays that he makes, I look at like the low A dot on the reg, right? When he'll leave a game and it's like, you know, a bunch of passes that don't go past the sticks, or like his A dot will be like 5.6 or something like that on the game. And people talk about his checkdowns, and my head sort of wants to explode a little bit because of the circumstances, but I don't want to make excuses. But I also understand that like a rational person looks at a situation and says they're not excuses, they're explanations to a degree. But do you see in his play, trying to take a step back and look at this, you know, maybe a little bit more broadly, does he rely on the checkdowns and take the safe plays too much? Should he be taking some chances? Then other people would get mad at his interceptions that obviously come from those chances. Whatever, I'm now leading you. But the check down thing, is that him? Is that the offense?
It's really hard to give you a real answer unless you're in those rooms. I think if you're in the quarterback room or in the meeting room, sometimes you can say, hey, you know, when they'll put up like, what are the keys to the game? Well, if the number one key to the game is protecting the football, he's playing quarterback at the elite level for them, doing exactly what they ask. If the number one projective is, hey, we need to go score, you know, whatever, 29 points to win this game. Well, then, you know, maybe we need to push it down the field a little bit more. And the reality and the bummer part of answering that question is you're probably not going to know the answer until someone else is calling the plays. And that's not, you know, I'm not calling for like any crazy changes or anything like that. I'm just saying you put him in a different system, see if he plays the same, you know, that type of thing. I think then you'll have a better indication of, you know, is this Herbert or is this a system? Is this what they're asking him to do? And the reality is it's probably messy. It's probably a little bit of both. I think it's fair to say that there are certain times where he could push it down the field a little bit more, and we could maybe see some of that anticipation consistently pop out. But at the same time, it's hard to anticipate when you've got, you know, another wide receiver out there that you don't have a whole lot of reps with that you're throwing the ball to, and your, you know, number one guy hasn't played much the entire season. So, you know, those types of things are, to your point, some of it sounds like excuses, and they are excuses because a lot of teams are dealing with injuries, but it's also the reality of what he's trying to do, and he needs to get better in his development and all those types of things that they need to build around, because I don't think you ask too many people in the league, you know, he's a dude at that position, and they got to find a way to capitalize on what he can do. He just needs to be able to have those pieces and do it, okay, consistently down the field.
I'm a little bit scared about their ability to do that now that he is going to demand $50 million a year. Like I feel like that window, like if this is what's happening when he's on his rookie deal.
Yeah. It's going to be tough to do that. But I mean, like any team, you know, if you have to be able to draft well, you have to be able to, you know, they're not going to be the only team that is going to want young, you know, explosive players on the perimeter. That's why those cats are such a premium right now. But I feel like you have to, well, I'm biased with it because, you know, I don't necessarily have to think about the defense or other places or other pieces, but man, you would just love to see him feel like he's got weapons at a top tier level to allow him to thrive at some point.
And yet, And now I'll just, because I don't want to be hypocritical myself, I started off the whole thing by saying like Patrick Mahomes is the MVP in my mind because he elevates everyone around him. So to a degree, I suppose that that could be a fair criticism of Justin Herbert, that the same doesn't seem to be true. Like he loses some weapons and he's dealing with, you know, the next tier of wide receivers there. And it kind of goes as expected, as opposed to, wow, look at what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, I would push back a little bit in defense of Herbert to say that, you know, like no offense to the Chargers staff or, you know, the other players around him, but there's not a whole lot of Hall of Famers right now doing anything to do with that offense. In my surefire Hall of Famers, where I think of, you know, Andy Reid, I think of Travis Kelce. Those cats are going to help you elevate people around you. And so it's one of those things where, you know, you take away those two pieces for Patrick Mahomes, he probably looks a lot like Justin Herbert right now, if we're being honest. You know, that's why so much of this stuff is so tough, because it is based on luck and situation and all those types of things. But I still think, you know, your fandom in Herbert can survive a little bit longer. I think it's worth kind of playing the mental gymnastics of, you know, how much longer can it look like this? You know, can you go another year and have it be the same? You know, once he signs a new deal, you know, are we going to be able to lose these types of games no matter who's around him? You know, those types of things I think are worth exploring. But right now, I mean, he's still, you know, those flashes make everything else kind of palatable.
Last question for you. And I love the fact that you don't operate in these extremes. This is one of my least favorite things about sports media, is that is what seems to generate the most money, the most clicks, all that stuff is like these hot takes. So I love the fact that you're like, let me just bring it right back here to the middle. But so this might seem like a question that you roll your eyes at, but people point to wins a lot when they're talking about quarterback play. And people have varying degrees about whether or not wins are a quarterback stat because people use them that way. What is your take on how relevant that is to bring up whether somebody wins or not?
You know, I think it matters because for a number of different reasons. I'm not sure that wins are a quarterback stat, you know, like a 1-to-1 ratio. You know, I think the easy kind of example to talk about is Jimmy Garoppolo when it comes to that type of thing, if I'm being honest. But I think that no one impacts your opportunity to win more than the quarterback and can sway it in such large fashions one way or the other because of the quarterback play. And so from there, I see that complex relationship, and I think it does matter. I think the ability to negatively impact the game with turnovers or to kind of give yourself an opportunity with explosive plays allows you to separate your impact on the game like no one else. And so I think that's why you see so much. That's why you get paid the most. That's why it matters the most. You know, not only is it the decision making and taking care of the ball, but you have that impact on the game. And so, you know, it's always going to matter. I think the thing that gets overhyped is, you know, is he a leader? You know, all those kind of discussions, like a one word answer from, you know, to the media impacting what that looks like, you know, is not necessarily the same way that I think of, you know, your impact to winning. And so
is that a Zach Wilson reference?
Yeah, it really is. Cause I feel like he's getting like thrown under the bus, and I've never been necessarily, you know, a QB1 Zach Wilson type cat, but just the reaction to that, I think is the overreaction to that type of stuff. That stuff, in my opinion, it matters, but you know what matters more? Not throwing it and hitting the middle field safety in the chest, you know, that matters more. And so the ability to be able to just, and you've talked about it already, it's a unique variable that's hard to quantify, even qualify, the ability to elevate your teammates, you know, and that type of thing impacting your winning. But at the end of the day, you know, I the easy example for me is Garoppolo, you know, he certainly makes them win game. It feels like he impacts their ability to win, but they're still going to make a change. You know, they can win the Super Bowl. They're still going to be looking to upgrade that position, because when you turn on the film, he's the same guy. He's turning down the same throws. They're not extending the field vertically. And so that ability to impact the game in a positive direction, that huge sway that you see from the top tier guys, that's why it matters so much. And so Yeah, there's no easy answer. I can hear myself rambling and say, you know, it's not a direct correlated 1-to-1 quarterback equals win, but no one else impacts the game more than the quarterback.
You have like the NPR voice for quarterback analysis. And I am so fucking here for it. I could listen to you. Like, you should, people should pay you to read audiobooks. Like, I feel like there's a whole separate revenue stream that you should really seek out. Your voice is soothing.
And I will take the compliment. I will say that one of my most nerve-wracking grad school experiences was one of my first classes. We had to do an NPR like panel.
And I was like, wow.
And I was just coming out of the league. And I was like, I had not been listening to a lot of NPR at that point. So I was like, okay, here we go. It was kind of a fly by the seat of my pants type moment. But hey, I love a good NPR.
It's just very soothing in here the whole time. JT, well, I mean, you're the best.
I appreciate it. There is an element of that. And just as like a model for to try to come back to the crazy hot takes, because I it's tongue in cheek that I know that if you have a podcast guest, you probably want them to give you hot takes.
Nope.
But there's an element of like real life. This is what it's like in the quarterback room. You can't go all crazy in the dumpster when you don't have a good game or don't have a couple of good weeks. You just kind of, hey, this is what the film says. We know where we can get better. And, you know, it's not easy. Let's go see if we can do it.
JT, if I have 5 listeners for the rest of my life and they let me continue to do the podcast, I will avoid those hot takes. I do not want that at all. I want to get smarter. And I feel like there are a lot of people out there, and maybe this is, again, kind of an antidote to what we see a lot on TV with people yelling at us things that are hyper extreme. Like, I didn't play football, but like, I know it's not that, you know, in my gut inherently, I just know it's never as simple as this or that, you know, there's so much gray. And I feel like what I am looking for is people to explain the gray to me. Like, so that I can then watch the games and be a smarter football fan. And I think you do that really, really well. So thank you so much for your time.
Appreciate it. That was fun.
Every word. So good. The QB School is the YouTube page. Literally, if you at all like this podcast and you do not subscribe to his page, I think you should. I think you guys would like it. He's so good at breaking down film in a way that is digestible. And obviously, this is not a visual medium, so you didn't get a chance to see him doing that. And I think you should. His Twitter handle is an easy way to find that work pretty easily. It's The QB School, and a huge thanks to him for coming on the show and being so generous with his time. We didn't even get to Brady or Rodgers, but I don't know. I kind of like that. That stuff's everywhere, right? Low-hanging fruit, as my guy Mayock would say. Anywho, thank you so much for listening. Again, we're going to have another podcast coming out later today, The Fantasy 15, normally a Friday show, but with the 3 games on Thursday, it feels like it makes more sense to get that pod out early. And then I will welcome the break, personally speaking, spend a couple of days on the couch like most of the rest of America, stuffing my face and trying to get family members to play board games with me. Are you guys into games? I feel like there's 2 types of people. You either hate games like that, or you're like really into games like that. Maybe there's a middle. I don't know that I know those people. I'm a huge games person right here. Currently into Aggravation and 5 Crowns and Ticket to Ride, though that's a tough one to explain to new people. So I end up kind of having to wait for like the same people to come around to play that one. Also Catan. I'm not even sure if that's how you say that name, but that's how I say it. I'm not going to rank those games in the spirit of today's show. I'm just going to tell you that they are all great. If you've got another game that I need to put on my radar, hit me up. I'd also love to hear your feedback about the show. I'm at Lindsay_Rhodes on Twitter, Lindsay Rhodes NFL on Instagram. Andrew Emmer is the producer of the NFL Road Show, which is a part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. Thank you so much for listening. Very grateful for you. Happy Thanksgiving.
SiriusXM Podcasts.